Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Pella Window and Door of Georgia, viewed to be the best.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
In my private life with my family, one of the things I love to do, we go to theme parks a lot. Just one of those deals. I don't talk about that on the air a lot because that's just sort of something we do together. But we go to a lot of theme parks, ride some roller coasters. Now, the really crazy roller coasters that are like, I don't know, the stuff that you see on YouTube, some of that kind of stuff, I can't ride some of those really crazy ones for a number of reasons. But I like, you know, fun sort of family-style roller coasters. I enjoy that. I got a chance to ride a roller coaster with my daughter just a few weeks ago, a couple of months ago, her first experience on something like that. And that's something my family likes to do. We theme park vacation, things like that. We do a pretty good bit of that. The point is, roller coasters sometimes can be fun. But this past weekend, I would say for Georgia fans, they sort of found themselves on maybe kind of the wrong kind of roller coaster. A lot of ups, a lot of downs, a lot of wild news cycle. And much like a roller coaster, many of us probably felt like we were holding on tight just to try to keep up with everything that was going on. So here today on our show, we're going to spend a good bit of time trying to make sense of a lot of the stuff that's out there. And in doing so, here is the one promise I can make to you. We are going to break the number one rule of sports talk on the internet and TV and radio and places you go for sports talk. We're going to break the number one rule. Because the number one rule, if you want to be successful, if you want to go viral, if you want to get a lot of attention, is you've got to have a very stark sort of black and white opinion that is very, very one way or very, very the other. There is really very little room for, to use a bigger word than I should, or a fancier word than I should probably use, nuance. There's very little room sometimes for nuance in sports talk discussions, especially if you want to be the most successful. Think about Skip Bayless, Stephen A. Smith, guys who get paid a lot of money. They get paid a lot of money because their opinions are almost totally absent of nuance. If you want to go viral, nuance is not your friend. But if you want to have an honest and accurate conversation, sometimes nuance is important. So I'd rather be honest with all of you who tune in than the sort of big, bold, loud opinions that perhaps might get me attention sort of outside the boundaries of our normal audience. But that's, I choose to serve you. So we're going to try to have a nuanced discussion about a good number of topics today, both the good, the bad, and everything else in between. Let me start with this, the fact that on Sunday you may have woken up to the news that Justice Terry, the five-star defensive lineman who had been committed to Georgia, all of a sudden had decided to flip his commitment away to USC. First person I saw report this was Steve Wiltfong from 24/7 Sports, and on X, when Wiltfong dropped the news, he also had a quote from Terry. So let me read this to you here as to why all of this going on. Wiltfong says, hi, five-star defensive lineman Justice Terry flips his commitment from Georgia to USC. The quote from Terry is, it was a no-brainer. Coming from a small town, I wanted to expand my life as much as possible. And I felt like USC is the right place to do that. It's the number one business school in the country. I want to study business entrepreneurship. Coach Henney is a good at developing players. I want to be a part of this journey with him. I trust his coaching and the way he plans on utilizing it. There you go. Justice Terry is going to USC because of its business school and because of USC's ability to develop defensive linemen. So I guess you sort of do with that what you will. That those are the stated reasons for Justice Terry going there. Now, we would say that in all likelihood, what's really happening here is that Terry's already in a certain form of business school. He is in business for himself, as he has every right to be, and that somehow, some way, USC has kind of leaned on some NIL here as a way of convincing Terry to flip from Georgia to USC. And then Isaiah Gibson, who you've seen some stuff online about, rumors about Elijah Griffin, who we're obviously following that story pretty closely there as well, that USC is sort of making a big push here on the basis of NIL to get involved with recruits who have had really good relationships with Georgia, including Terry, who until Sunday morning was a Georgia commit. Now, here is where the nuanced conversation comes in. Because it's very easy to sell this as a big headline and a hot, juicy topic. Big city program from out west going to use NIL to steal Georgia recruits. That sounds like a big, loud topic, and to a certain extent it kind of is. But if you want to have the right kind of sort of nuanced discussion about all of this, I think the right way to look at this doesn't represent a crisis. This doesn't represent the sky falling either for Georgia or for college football at large. But it is a problem to solve, especially if you're Georgia. Not a crisis. Georgia's not doomed. You know, the sort of what's wrong with Georgia recruiting meme isn't being unearthed again around all of this. But at the same time, it is a little bit of a problem to solve. Because if you look at, like, the recent history of Georgia, national champions in 2021, national champions in 2022, a total of four first-round defensive linemen were kind of the bedrock in some form or fashion of either all of them on the 2021 team, still Jalen Carter left over in the 2022 team. And of those four, you know, you do see a guy like Jordan Davis, who I would say is a little bit of a developmental success story for Georgia. Devontae Wyatt, who was, you know, kind of that to a certain extent. But in the case of like the Trayvon Walkers and the Jalen Carters, they represent what most of the very best defensive linemen are going to be. They represent the sort of elite recruits who become top-flight defensive linemen and eventually high-value first-round picks. That at the defensive line position, if you want to have great success at that position, it is imperative that you have elite recruits. You can't completely develop your way to a great defensive line. You can do that some. Jordan Davis is an example of that. Devontae Wyatt, to a certain extent, is an example of that. But if you want to have the very best defensive lines, you got to have players like Jalen Carter. You've got to have players like Trayvon Walker. And we would say in the class of 2025 or the class of 2024, you know, in this sort of NIL age, that if you want to have the very best defensive lineman, there is a little bit of a monetary price that has to be paid for that. So that's just the fact. That's the sort of nuanced conversation. And for Georgia, it doesn't create a crisis. It just creates a little bit of a problem to solve. And so the way in which Georgia goes about solving this problem, I believe, is by asking itself two pretty critical questions, I would say, two pretty important questions. And as a setup for those questions, I want to take a moment to hear from Kirby Smart. Now, both the clips we're about to play from Kirby are clips you've heard on the show before, but they're worth revisiting here today. The first of these goes back to Pro Day, when Kirby Smart was asked the kind of question that coaches, especially Georgia coaches, especially Kirby Smart, typically get asked around these Pro Day situations. When you see all these great former players who are in your program, who are now working out and getting ready to continue the trend of great success in the NFL draft, how much of a commercial does that create for your program? That's the sort of typical mood that a pro day at a place like Georgia has. But this year, when it came to all of that kind of stuff, about whether or not recruits were watching to see the former dogs become future NFL stars, Kirby Smart had a much more, I guess, realistic appraisal of the situation about how it feels here in 2024. This is important in this context. This is what Kirby Smart said about all of that just a few days ago.
It's a great sell for the kids that'll listen to it, because there's a lot of them that want to ask about NIL. They don't want to ask about what your NFL players have done. But I think it's much more important how you develop players than how much NIL you give.
So that's Kirby Smart saying not every recruit these days wants to pay attention to this. There are some recruits that want to have the NIL conversation more so than the future NFL conversation. Now, Kirby still says it's more important to develop players, which we would probably agree, both as men and as players. But nonetheless, you don't get to have the world that you wish was. You have to deal with reality on its own terms. And this is the reality that exists in college football right now, which is there are some players who are making NIL a much larger part of their profile in terms of the decision they make. Even going to a place like USC, which has repeatedly shown an inability, especially under Lincoln Riley, to develop the kinds of defensive linemen the way that Justice Terry is, USC is a failure at that. USC has a track record of proving it's incapable of doing that, and yet still the NIL perhaps seems to matter more right now. So here's the question that's just a, once again, not a crisis, but a problem to be solved. Here's the first question that has to be asked in light of all of that. What is Georgia going to do to get more money? Now, I think this is not necessarily an easy question to answer, which is what makes this sort of a complicated problem, but it is an important question to ask. Now, overall, I believe that the best idea as it relates to NIL has not been introduced yet. Because for right now, the only NIL idea that seems to really exist is, hey, asking people to give and give until it hurts, right? Like, that's sort of the only idea that's out there right now. I do believe at a certain point in time, somebody somewhere is going to find a better idea for NIL. Perhaps it'll be us. Who knows? But somebody somewhere is going to create a better idea for NIL as a way of generating more money. But for now, it's sort of the thing of, hey, you've got to just keep passing around the collection plate until you get the money that you need. Now, we did in a roundabout way address this the other day in that you know, we're kind of, as Kirby Smart has said himself, sort of in the middle of the Kirby Smart era. These are the glory days for Georgia. We have said that if you've got the means to give, there'll never be a better time to give to Georgia than right now, because this is a time in which, you know, Georgia's kind of on top of college football. It's sort of easier to spend to stay there than it is to spend to get there. Now, for people who are dealing with grocery bills that are twice as expensive they used to be, and, you know, a housing market right now that's a little bit of a I don't know what, you know, if you're in that situation, well, we're not saying you need to give, because, you know, your financial circumstance may be completely different. But if you're in a situation where you're like, you know, I could give, I'm just not sure if I want to, not really sure that Georgia needs my money, you know, this may be the best overall time to do that. There may never be a better time to do that, because this is the moment in the middle of the Kirby Smart glory years where trying to find a way to extend that as long as you possibly can, I would say that's a, you know, you don't get return on the investment, so it's not really an investment, but theoretically that's a good investment to make right now if you're getting a lot of joy out of the success that Georgia football is currently enjoying. That's the first question that has to be asked, which is, how does Georgia get more money? But oftentimes, this is where the NIL conversation sort of stops, and I don't think that it should, because there's actually another question that also needs to be asked. And another statement from Kirby Smart going back just a few days ago, I also think brings that question to mind there as well. This was Kirby being asked about coaches being unhappy with the current state of NIL, and Kirby sort of pushed back on the notion that they're complaining at Georgia about anything. But in the midst of that topic, also gave you sort of a specific idea of one of the things that he doesn't currently like about the NIL age that we're living in. But once again, I think it creates the kind of question that needs to be asked right now. So let me let you hear Kirby. I'll tell you more about that here in a moment. Take a listen.
Yeah, I think the leaders are going to do a great job positioning us for the future in terms of what they do. The choice of each college coach is obviously up to the college coaches. I mean, there's certainly higher stakes and higher pay than there's ever been for college coaches across the board. I mean, there's the guys making money and making livings that, you know, coordinators can retire now. They don't have to go get a head job. You look back even 10 years ago, how much has changed for coaches. So there's no crying out there from my end. I want what's best for the student athlete. And sometimes I question the system we have now, if it's best for the student athlete, because it's not necessarily best for the sophomore, junior, and senior. It may be best for the freshman, but it may not be best for the sophomore, junior, and senior. I would love to see a little more fair system for the players in terms of within the players. But there's not a lot of – I don't have a lot of coaches complaining, saying they want to get out of the profession. They enjoy the profession. They want the profession to be about relationships, developing talent, and rewarding positive performance both on and off the field. And that comes through what you've done in your body of work of being there, not necessarily where it's a reverse system of the younger players sometimes get more than the older players.
I want to zero in on one part of what Kirby Smart said right there. He said, I'm not really quite sure the current system is fair for the older players, basically saying that players perhaps like Justice Terry are making more money in some cases than players on a roster who've been there 2, 3, and 4 years. And I'm kind of like Kirby Smart in that, well, that doesn't seem all that equitable necessarily. But once again, we don't get to choose the world that we want. We have to deal with reality on its own terms. And if what Smart's describing is true, frankly, that's not much different than the situation in the NFL either, right? Where on most NFL teams, you know, the highest paid or among the highest paid players on most NFL teams are the first round draft picks. The guys that get the big bonuses when they sign their first round draft pick contract, they're making far more in many cases than veteran players who've been in the league 3, 4, 5, 6 years, more proven commodities. But the NFL salary structure sort of rewards youth more so than experience sometimes there as well. In fact, it's the older players who are the most likely to be cut in that cutthroat league than the younger players are for, you know, the same basic reasons. There's a little bit of an imbalance that favors youth in the NFL too. And so this is where I think the next question that Georgia has to ask itself, in addition to how do we get more NIL money, the perhaps most important question of all is, what do you choose to do with the money that you have? At a certain point, every program has raised all the dollars it can. And now what do you choose to do that? How do you choose to allocate those funds? Because ultimately, your value is not proven by your ability. It's proven by your marketability. And there are some positions that in the NIL space are just going to be worth more, the same way the NFL draft favors some positions over others. And if you want big-time defensive linemen putting a lot of money towards that, that may be a requirement. That may be imperative if you want to succeed in that space right now. And if Georgia wants to stay Georgia, having elite defensive linemen is something that it's going to have to do. Now, let me do one quick final thing to sort of sum all of this up. I got a really interesting message yesterday on the X platform as all this Justice Terry stuff and the stuff with Gibson, the stuff with allegedly with Griffin or whatever, as all this was playing out. And it reflects a sentiment that I have seen from some Georgia fans in other places before. And admittedly, I've sort of thought some of this myself from time to time, too. I want to show you this on the screen here in light of all of this. So Bobby wrote to me and said, Georgia won the last true national championship against Alabama. He means the 2021 season. That's sort of the last title pre-NIL. He says, now, this is Bobby to me on X, it's a pro style, meaning professional, free agency league. Amateur status is gone. I'm not complaining about someone getting paid, but the ability to recruit based on the old model is now gone. I believe that Bobby's statement there reflects a lot of the way that a lot of Georgia fans feel. And I sort of understand where that, some of that kind of stuff comes from. I do. But here's what I'm here to tell you. Don't give up on the college system being gone just yet. And don't give up on Georgia's ability to navigate the current system, whatever it is. Don't give up on that either. I do sort of agree. It's kind of nice that Georgia won a national championship and what we sort of think of as the bygone age back when it was all being done just for the love of the game. I say somewhat tongue-in-cheek. Kind of nice to think about that. But also in the age that we're in right now, Georgia can still dominate in this too. It's not facing a crisis. It's just simply facing a complicated problem. And I trust Kirby Smart and his staff, their ability to solve those complicated problems. And in fact, it wouldn't surprise me if Justice Terry still ends up at UGA before it's all said and done. My name's Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Pella Window and Door of Georgia. We're glad to have you with us no matter how you get to us. Live on video, 10 a.m. across all platforms, first and 15 there at dognation.com. Dog Nation app, that comes to you at 9:45. Radio, Athens Sports Radio, 960 Ref. Podcasts, wherever you find them, including the world-famous dognation.com. So happy that you are here. And a big thanks to our friends at Pella Window and Door of Georgia, who make it all possible. Energy-efficient windows and doors, that is what Pella Window and Door of Georgia is all about for you. Keeping you feeling good on the inside, looking good on the outside. That is what they got going on for you here. And I want you to make sure you check that out here right now, because they've also got great savings for you right now, too. Between now and the end of the month, you can get 20% off your project, no money down, no interest, no payments for 12 months there as well. So you got some great stuff there going on with that. It's just a great time. You know, springtime of year is that moment in which people are sort of thinking about, what's the best way to take the best care of my home? You know, people think about spring cleaning or those home improvement projects. Well, I don't think there's anything you can do to sort of improve the way your home looks on the outside, feels on the inside, more than stopping by the Experience Center there in Duluth and just really settling in and putting your hand on the product, sort of feeling what makes that different, really experiencing the best of what Pella Window and Door of Georgia provides for all of you. This is a great time to do that. Now, I want you to reach out to them and let them know that I sent you. That's Brandon Adams from Dog Nation Daily. We've got some interesting stuff on the screen here right now. A little bit different phone number, a little bit different website. Let me give you instead something different than what you're seeing there on the screen. I want you to call 678-638-1429. That's 678-638-1429. Or you can reach out to them online, pellaofga.com/dognation. That's pellaofga.com/dognation. Just make sure you tell them that BA from Dog Nation Daily said they would take good care of you, because I know they will. They've been taking care of folks in our audience for a long time, and I know they're going to take care of you there as well. One more time on that email address, or I should say that web address. It's pellaofga.com/dognation, pellaofga.com/dognation. You also give them a call, 678-638-1429. Energy-efficient windows and doors, that's what Pella Window and Door of Georgia is all about. Pella Window and Door of Georgia is viewed to be the best. We're going to get John Stinchcomb here coming up in just a moment today. Prior to that, I'm going to go around the doghouse. It's poured today by our friends at Dr. Pepper. That's always a very good thing. The news for around the doghouse today, probably a little bit less so. I want to deal with the Trevor Etienne situation, part of a kind of a rough Sunday morning for Georgia fans. You're waking up, enjoying that coffee, perhaps getting ready to go to church or something like that. You're dealing with, you know, kind of a rough, you know, handful of news. And some of that involved Trevor Etienne, the recent transfer from Florida, arrested on suspicion of DUI. Our friends at Fox 5 in reporting this had some interesting details, but the specific charge facing Etienne here, I want to read from their report because it gave some, I think, interesting information. So what Fox 5 wrote here, and then other outlets may have had this too, I just happened to see it from them. Etienne was charged with DUI of alcohol, reckless driving, failure to maintain lane, and affixing materials that reduce the visibility of windows, windshields, which I'm assuming is tint. They report all of this as misdemeanors. That's the same thing Dog Nation had there as well. Now, what they also go on to say is that the DUI was specified as, quote, less safe. And what Fox 5 says is that's a classification in Georgia that allows drivers whose blood alcohol content is less than 0.08 grams to be convicted. So if I'm understanding that correctly, and some of y'all are more, I guess, equipped to handle stuff like this than I am, but that means that so he was driving after having been drinking, but if I'm understanding this correctly, not enough to be above the limit, but because he was less than 21, still eligible to be charged with DUI. So there you go on all of that. Now, here's my just very, very succinct and sort of brief opinion on this. And I don't know that everybody's going to agree with this, but this is just sort of how I see it. To me, this is obviously a problematic situation, but it's also an example of the system sort of functioning the way that I think that it should. Like, I don't want Trevor Etienne to be drinking and driving. I don't want that. But if that happens, I think this is the law sort of responding on that the way that it's sort of supposed to. And, you know, listen, you know, people being less than 21 and drinking, that's a little bit of a community nuisance, right? It's like, you don't want that. It just, you know, you don't want that in your neighborhood. You don't want that, you know, on the streets. You don't want that. And, you know, you sort of want law enforcement kind of policing against this sort of thing, whether it's a Georgia football player or not. On the same token, you know, it's also not the kind of thing where you hear some Georgia fans who are kind of worried about what they sort of view as a recent series of problematic issues for Georgia. And they're sort of looking at the, you know, the sort of heavy consequence to make all this go away. And you see on message board and some of that kind of stuff, some Georgia fans are like, you got to kick this guy off the team. And I have said repeatedly about stuff like this, I'm not doing that. I'm not punishing ETN because of something that somebody else did. In other words, well, so-and-so got in trouble and so-and-so got in trouble. And so now for Trevor Etienne, I'm going to handle him more harshly because of so-and-so, you know, getting in trouble in the past. I don't really feel like that's very fair. I don't really feel like that's, you know, very equitable. That you know, this is an example of someone facing a misdemeanor charge, not the kind of thing that in his life he couldn't come back from. And I think that's just the way this is probably supposed to play out. And people say, well, he's got to face some sort of consequence. He's got to face some sort of punishment. But to me, that's sort of what the arrest is for. Like, this is not an easy thing to kind of go through. It's probably going to cost him something financially to, even if he gets the charge eventually reduced, there's still sort of a legal fee associated with that. And there's also just some complication of having to go through this, that this is sort of what happens. You know, sometimes young people sort of step outside the boundaries of the law, and an appropriate punishment when that happens is sort of the right thing to do. I don't think there's a need to be too heavy-handed about any of that, but there's also, I think it would be inappropriate to completely disregard it and say it doesn't matter at all. As we said before, nuance is probably the right way to approach this. This isn't a good thing, but it's also not the worst thing that's ever happened. I'm sure there'll be some internal discipline facing him. He may even have an in-game suspension too. We probably won't find out about that until the first game happens there against Clemson. But ultimately, the system, especially in a college town, sort of exists to kind of provide some sort of measure of punishment, some sort of measure of, you know, policing to keep young people from going too far out of bounds. In this case, it sounds like ETN went a little bit out of bounds and law enforcement was there to kind of bring him back in. And that's sort of, to me, the way the system is sort of supposed to work. And that is Around the Doghouse, poured today by our friends at Dr. Pepper. And, of course, the subject related to Trevor Etienne, not a fun discussion. The subject related to Dr. Pepper around here, you know how much we love that discussion. In fact, you know, we're running around this weekend doing a whole bunch of stuff. Son's got baseball games, daughter's got gymnastics, where everybody's just sort of running around doing all kinds of things. And so when I'm running around doing all that, I need that little pick-me-up every now and then, that little nice sort of treat to kind of help me stay just rolling down the road, because there's all kinds of stuff going on, it seems, this time of year. And for me, that's always Dr. Pepper. 23 different flavors make up the rich, one-of-a-kind flavor of Dr. Pepper. So if you want to be as happy as me on a regular basis, have plenty of Dr. Pepper in your life. That's a great way to do that. So as you're doing your grocery shopping there at Kroger or wherever it is that you're going, make sure you pick up that delicious Dr. Pepper because it is a pepper thing. So make sure you check that out today. All right. So, by the way, I've now got the third different person telling me how to pronounce ETN's name, and it's completely different than what other people who supposedly say they know for sure have been saying there as well. So we shall see about all of that. But anyway, a lot going on around Georgia right now. A little late getting to John Stinchcomb, so let's jump into that here right now today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Miss a little John Stinchcomb here. Sorry for getting to John late. Want to be respectful of his time, so let's jump right into this. A lot of news, John, kind of all over the place as it relates to Georgia here this weekend. We've got some good recruiting news that we'll eventually get to here in a moment there as well. So let's do a little bit of the Trevor Etienne stuff just for a moment. You know, DUI, I guess it's called DUI less safe. I just said a moment ago, this sort of feels like the system sort of working. If someone's out there drinking and driving, I want them to get caught. If, you know, a young person under 21, that's a little bit of a, you know, thing where like, you know, I don't want, you know, too much of that in the community either. It's also, to me, not the kind of thing that you throw a guy off the team for. You just sort of handle it and you face consequences and you move on. And a lot of people in our audience could probably tell a similar story. I just sort of think there's some room for some nuance in something like this where you don't excuse it, but you also, it's also not the apocalypse either. Am I wrong for trying to sort of split the difference in a situation like this?
That's exactly where I'm at with it. I think you're trying to correct behavior, right? And this is a learning opportunity for a young guy who's, you know, made a mistake. You don't drink and drive. This isn't drunk driving. It sounds like, you know, he's less than that 0.08 threshold. But he's underage, he had been drinking, and now he's behind the wheel. So there needs to be corrective behavior, some action that's taken. Just don't overdo it. Make sure that it's a learning opportunity and not a life-altering situation. I'm grateful that it wasn't worse. And, you know, there was no accident involved. He wasn't inebriated past the point where, you know, it was hazardous to the community. And he had well drinking, you know, well past that 0.08 threshold. So again, I liked your take. I think it's exactly where I'm at, that there needs to be a response. It needs to be a learning opportunity for him, but this isn't the end of the world. He didn't go well outside beyond the means of what many other students have probably found themselves in a similar situation, where corrective behavior needs to be taken, corrective actions need to be taken at a behavior, but just don't overdo it.
Yeah, I mean, my only other thing I'll say about this is that if people dive into, like, the sort of DUI laws, what you'll find out is they're very, very strict. And, like, I mean, it is, you know, a lot of things can get you a DUI, right? And the point of that is better that than what else could come from those same actions. Like, it is not good to be dealing with this, and I imagine there's a pretty stiff financial penalty, even if, you know, some of that's just paying your own lawyer to go through this. This is going to cost him some time and treasure here, but better that than what it could be. And that's why I think most of us are sort of thankful to have, you know, laws like this that are somewhat strict, because it does theoretically protect our roads here. And so from that standpoint, this isn't good, but this consequence is so much better than what some other consequence could perhaps possibly be.
Yeah, and it's the right response. There needs to be He needs to be cited. It's not something that you just say, all right, well, hopefully you don't do this again. Less safe is not safe. And so I think the fact that he was cited and there will be punishment and there is going to be a little bite to it is appropriate. I don't want anybody behind the wheel, whether they're underage or not, that could be affected. I mean, he's cited for reckless driving. So there was a reason why he got pulled over in the first place. Now, the tinted windows, not really worried about that. But some of the other charges, you think, well, this needs to be addressed appropriately. I think that's the key word, appropriately, so that it doesn't become a much worse situation. Nobody wants to get that phone call late at night about a family member that was involved in an accident, whether it was their fault or not. So appropriate action is what this situation calls for, and not an overreaction.
So, speaking of things not to overreact to, there was other news completely away from this. We spent some time talking about today there as well. That definitely raised some eyebrows. Like, Justice Terry is just a really good defensive line prospect. It's the kind of player that I really want to be at a place like Georgia. I've made my bones over and over again. These line of scrimmage guys in state for 2025 are just so important. And, you know, it seems like, you know, USC gets a chance to host some of these, you know, guys, Isaiah Gibson being another one that was sort of thought to be, you know, in a pretty good spot with Georgia. They have what appears to be sort of money whipped Georgia by, you know, hosting him for a visit. You know, NIL promises allegedly get made, and all of a sudden Terry, early Sunday morning, is flipping from Georgia to USC. What do you make of the kinds of recruiting battles that Georgia's currently being forced to fight, where, you know, Georgia's got a way better track record. I'm talking about a way better track record of developing players like Terry than certainly USC does, which essentially has no track record whatsoever. And yet ultimately, as Kirby Smart kind of forewarned the other day, that doesn't necessarily matter anymore. So what do you make about this current age we're living in with these kinds of recruiting battles?
It is the world we live in. Specifically for D-line, you look at it and go, there's not a better place than to play for the University of Georgia. The track record speaks for itself. The number of first-round draft picks, the number of guys that have developed, the top-end talent that Georgia's been able to bring in and then showcase and then walk with as they move into that next phase professionally, it speaks for itself. So there are other factors at play here. Obviously, NIL is one that I think everyone points to, specifically with USC and the amount of money that they've been able to spend and draw players in their direction. But this isn't a story that's closed. I mean, this is just a chapter, the next chapter, if you will. There was a reason why he committed to Georgia. There's obviously a reason why he's committed to USC now. But this isn't signing day. We're not in December yet. There's still a lot of time. And, you know, I'm sure there's some gamesmanship at play as well when you look at the amount of time and space between middle of March and signing day. I think there's a lot of chips left to fall.
Yeah, I think you're probably right about that. And I think that Georgia could still win with Terry before it's all said and done. We've obviously seen that with, like, Mikael Williams, similar situation in the past, same school, in fact, even. And Georgia came up out on top on that. I just think there's one really important thing that's got to be taken from all of this is that when you see the high profile quarterback, or, and I'm not thinking of any player specifically, I'm just thinking about sort of the stereotype of, like, the diva wide receiver. You know, I think it's easy for Georgia to sort of, you know, kind of disregard that and say, oh, we don't need that guy, because Georgia's been scoring about 40 points per game with the sort of offensive recruits that it's getting. That if it wants to be kind of somewhat flippant about the sort of elite offensive recruit that's sort of making big time demands, Georgia kind of has a little bit of room to do that, because the sorts of players they have been recruiting have been enabling that kind of success. Georgia's been scoring about 40 points per game now for the last 3 years. They're doing just fine offensively with the kinds of recruits they're getting. I don't believe you can do that on defense, John. I don't believe you can have a great defense without great defensive recruits. Why is it so different than offense? I'm not smart enough to know, but the track record suggests that I'm right, especially with the defensive line. For every Jordan Davis, who was a little bit of a developmental success story, it's Jalen Carter, it's Trayvon Walker, guys that I could have walked on the field and said, that's the best player out here, and I'm no scout, but even I could have identified them right away. There is a certain thing about the defensive line of, if you want a great defensive line, you have to have great defensive line recruits. And so Georgia doesn't have the luxury of saying, we're not playing this NIL game with players like that, because if you're not playing that game to a certain extent, you're not getting players like that. And then the thing that has made Georgia Georgia, that just simply won't be true anymore. Georgia doesn't have the freedom to exclude itself from this business, no matter how dirty it may think this business is.
Yeah, I think that offensive and defensive line is still a premium position. Yeah. I think you have to win in the trenches on both sides. I think the game has evolved a little bit. I think we can all recognize that because it's spread wider and deeper, and there's ways to attack teams, that you have to have good secondary players that can support the run. And, you know, what's become the outside zone is those quick throws to wide receivers, where it's your secondary players having to make plays in space when it's 2-on-2 and 3-on-3 situations. Maybe it's minimized the offensive and defensive line a little bit, but when you look at postseason play, you look at the college football playoffs, you look at the series, even Washington this past year, who was recognized as having the best offensive line, in their final game, it was a gross mismatch.
Yeah.
You saw the effect that it had because of the dominance of a defensive front. And so I think what matters most, what shows up again and again, and including Georgia in that SEC championship game against Alabama, is you need to have a defensive front that makes a emphatic difference. In those big games, those heavyweight bouts or matches,
yeah,
you can't combine the two, you need to be able to have those horses that make a difference. And Georgia has had that in the past. We've seen it time again. And you want to be able to bring in those recruits that continue to fit that mold. We've done it the past couple of years. We have some young guys that I'm excited about in their second year at Georgia and or coming off a red shirt for a few. But there is some opportunity there. But at the end of the day, you have to have the right guys on the field. And you know, having a solid defensive line allows you to do a lot of things at that second and third level on the defense.
Yeah, here's the thing to me about defensive line, John, and I would, as you say, I would put the offensive line in a similar category, but here's the one thing that makes offensive line and defensive line at least a little bit different for me, that if I'm, as a coach, if I'm facing a dominant offensive line, I can at least try to throw more bodies at the problem, right? Whether it be additional pass rushers or putting more guys in the box. There's at least some coaching point I might can do, some sort of strategic thing I might can do, try to neutralize a great offensive line a little bit. The best that I can tell, if I'm facing a great defensive line, there really isn't much, like there's not much of a coaching point out there to neutralize a great defensive line. A great defensive line is just sort of always going to be true, and it's always going to be choking the life out of me on every single play. That's the thing that I see is kind of an untrained eye. I'm not a coach. I'm not a former player such as you. But when I watch the game, I just don't see much of a mitigating factor against a great defensive line. It doesn't seem like the kind of thing that you can do much to coach against if the other side's just got a defensive line that's so much better than what you've got on your own offensive front.
Well, the answer to that is you have to sacrifice some things, right? You go to quick throws. You're trying to get the ball out. You're trying to minimize the impact that a good, effective front is. They have one or two guys, you can run away from them. If they're good pass rushers, you can leave an extra blocker in. But it all comes at a sacrifice. Same thing if on the defensive side of the ball, if you have to bring more bodies, well, you're a little more vulnerable to some of the passes. So, you know, there's a pros, cons, there's a cost that you have to measure anytime you're looking at a situation. So if it's a great defensive front, maybe it is more quick throws. Maybe you have to have a few more 2 and 3 player route combinations instead of 5 wide, knowing that your offensive line isn't going to hold up. And you have to bring in, you know, a chip from a running back or leave a tight end in and not have him go out and pass coverage. You have to move the pocket. So there are things that you can do, but it just comes at a cost. All of a sudden, you're trying to react to what they do instead of dictating to the opposite side of the ball and emphasize what you want to do. So a good defensive front is absolutely a strength for any team. And I think what we've seen in, you know, let's look at the past 5 years for Georgia defenses. If we're able to, one, stop the run with our front four, not have to add more bodies to that space, then it frees us up on the back end to play a little more coverage and have some extra bodies and make those windows a little bit tighter. So it absolutely affects the game and is a huge strength when a defense is able to do it.
Well, I think you're right about that. Let's finish with this, if you don't mind. And it's a weird day today because we're like 40 minutes into the show. And we're just now getting to the fact that Georgia got a commitment from the number one player in the class of 2026 on Saturday. But Jared Curtis, the quarterback from Tennessee, did commit to Georgia. And, you know, John, Curtis is not a guy that I think a lot of our audience knows a ton about. In fact, I think the first time we ever mentioned him on the show may have been Friday, which actually was a total coincidence. I had no idea he was committing to UGA. We just did talk about him a little bit because he was, you know, set to visit Georgia here this week. And I'm not asking you to break down, you know, Curtis's film here or anything like that. But I do think it's kind of cool, John, that Georgia is still the kind of program that can provide this level of pleasant surprise. And listen, I'll be totally honest. I put the chances of Curtis being at Georgia somewhere in like the 50-50 range because in this day and age, 2 years is an eternity before he gets to Georgia. But it's still kind of cool to think that in the middle of a random Saturday afternoon, Georgia can unearth the top quarterback in the class of 2026. Kind of cool to think that Georgia still has that ability to sort of provide these positive surprises every now and then. It also kind of plays into what is a really interesting time for Georgia quarterback recruiting overall. Anything else to add to the notion that Georgia went out and reached deep into the future to grab a quarterback commit there on Saturday?
Yeah, it's fun. It makes for fun banter, but it's I think it's the same conversation we just had about justice. There's so much time between when you commit and when you sign, and you know, hopefully this is a commitment that lasts, and we'll see him sign. But 2026 is a long way off, and there's a lot of water to pass under many bridges between now and then. But it's exciting. I think that one of the main reasons we all recognize that Georgia is a national contender year in and year out is because it continues to recruit nationally at a very high level. And, you know, the downside of quarterbacks is very few are like Carson Beck that are willing to ride out being deeper on that depth chart and wait for their opportunity as they, you know, continue to hone their craft in the background. What we've seen specifically, you look at Heisman Trophy winners, a lot of those guys are not willing to sit. They transfer in and look for better opportunities. So you're hopeful that Georgia provides that and that opportunity for guys to see, if I stick around, even if I'm not the guy from day one, there will be opportunities for me down the road for me to reach my overarching goals of the success they all want to find on a football field and become professionals down the road.
All right, very quick before we let you go, we've been following your saga this month. We saw the beard to begin with. You're going to play the Roman soldier in the Easter play. Then you decided to go clean shaven because the beard was scratchy, but also I guess the Roman soldiers, more true to form, were a little bit more clean shaven themselves. So is your acting debut, maybe it's not your debut, maybe you've acted more than I realize, but are you set to play the Roman soldier this weekend? Get the costume all ready? Are you ready to go on this front?
We sure are. We've got one rehearsal left tomorrow evening, but Good Friday's coming quick, and it will be my acting debut as the Roman soldier. So to all those that get to experience it, I'm glad that there's others that they can enjoy, and they'll just have to suffer through my performance. But looking forward to it. Hopefully I honor Jesus well, and all those that are in attendance can benefit from trying to look back and see some of the faces in the crowd that were there and got to experience Jesus firsthand.
No doubt, John. I'm sure that you will do right by all of that. Thanks for being with us in the program here today, and certainly happy Easter season to your family and friends, and we'll look forward to having you on the show again very soon here as well.
Appreciate you having me on, BA. Go Dawgs.
Yes, sir.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, I'm glad to be able to talk to John on all of that. I think he's always got a really good perspective on those types of things. And the Curtis thing is really interesting. We'll get to that and the Shivers commitment here coming up in just a moment. Do a little bit more due diligence on a couple of those topics. Good news for Georgia recruiting that came early in the weekend, kind of overshadowed by the stuff that happened a little bit later on after that. But prior to all of that, let's get ready to go cruising around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. And boy, continue to have those conversations. Everybody getting ready for that Dog Nation cruise on board Allure of the Seas. And it's a reminder to me that these Oasis-class ships, for a lot of our Dog Nation people, this will be their first experience on one of those Oasis-class ships. And it's going to be a great time because it's more entertainment and more things to do than any Dog Nation cruise in the past. And we sort of look at our Dog Nation cruises a little bit like movie sequels. You know, every year it's our job to make them bigger and better than ever before. And the only way to do that this year was to be on an Oasis class ship. Now, the honest truth is we're only a few days away from sailing on this, so you're not going to be able to get on the Dog Nation cruise, but you can do just like we're doing. You can sail on Allure of the Seas if you want to, or you can sail on another Oasis class ship. In fact, a brand new Oasis class ship is going to debut out of the same port we're sailing out of, Port Canaveral, which for me is sort of my home port. It's the one I like to sail out of because it's the closest to where I live here in the Atlanta area. And in July, a brand new Oasis class ship is going to debut. It's called Utopia of the Seas. In fact, Utopia recently announced it's actually going to start sailing a little bit earlier than it originally planned on. So they've got Utopia finished and it's ready to go. And it's going to be regaling sailors and cruise ship passengers here coming up very, very soon. And when you kind of do the overhead shot there, you see the pool deck looking down the Central Park neighborhood. I mean, really, it's like all of this taking place while you're at sea. The entertainment options like the Flow Riders, you see those. That's the Aqua Theater. If you're watching on video, you see that. It's a high diving show. You kind of see back behind that, you've got the Boardwalk neighborhood where kind of like being on Coney Island. You got the carousel on the ship and all kinds of fun things to enjoy. So Jessica Slater can tell you all about what Royal Caribbean's got going on right now. Please make sure you give her a call. 770-718-9147. That's 770-718-9147. You can also email her, jslater@dreamvacations.com. She'll tell you everything you need to know about Royal Caribbean here in 2024. All kinds of fun stuff going on there. All right, now, let's get ready to go cruise around the SEC here for a moment. We'll give you an update before we're done on our Golden Shoe Bracket Challenge. Some very impressive performances from some of our game pickers over the weekends. We'll tell you more about that. But for now, how about an update on the tournament itself? So last night, pretty good drama between an SEC team, Texas A&M, trying to push a number one seed, Houston, to the limit. You had the buzzer beater there to force overtime. Houston does advance, which means you have just two SEC teams left in the Sweet 16. You got Alabama, which is going to play North Carolina. This may be my favorite game of the Sweet 16. Am I right for saying this? Should have a lot of points scored. Alabama, Grand Canyon. Boy, you talk about a wild game that was. Back and forth, a lot of fun. Obviously, we were rooting for the Lopes there in that game. Would have loved to have seen Alabama go down. Didn't happen. But it sets up a fun battle between UNC and Alabama, and you expect to see a good number of points there in that. And then Tennessee trying to advance there as well. Get a chance to take on Dana Altman and the Creighton Blue Jays. That's going to be Friday. How about 10:09 p.m. for that game? It's so late for that. Houston Duke's not a bad game, I don't reckon. Gonzaga Purdue's not a bad game. Purdue, both these teams have kind of shaken off the malaise of, you know, teams that have at times been criticized for not doing enough in the NCAA tournament. The math nerds started to defend Gonzaga on that, but still the stigma sort of sticks to Gonzaga a bit. Purdue probably more so because they've lost to double-digit seeds in the first round 3 years in a row. This seems like it might be a little bit different type of Purdue team right now. But all of this, and here's the one thing about the tournament that I think is important to remember, is that for all the talk about upsets and, you know, brackets being busted and who's your upset that you're picking, 12s over 5s, sometimes 14s over 3s, the truth is the later you go, NCAA tournament's actually a lot more chalky than you realize in terms of the better teams advancing. And that may be something important to keep in mind right now with UConn, who just looks like a different level of basketball team to me right now. So we'll pay attention to that. I also wanted to go back to a story we talked about the other day here for a little bit, back to the world of football for a moment, in terms of the breakout players. You know, we talked about the Braylon Wilson being tabbed by ESPN as a breakout player. That was a somewhat surprising thing. Actually, there was another outlet that did another story like this that also had another sort of surprising Georgia player in a discussion like that. We may get to that at some point in time this week. But as far as the other SEC teams in this list, for Texas, they're mentioning Colin Simmons. I thought that Simmons was a really important recruiting win for the Longhorns. The one thing that Texas seemed to understand prior to coming to the SEC, to go back to the defensive line topic we've addressed so much, defensive line, pass rush, those are the things you have to have in the SEC. You don't have to have them in the Big 12. The Big 12 is essentially a 7-on league, you know, basically a 7-on-7 pillow fight style league where it was all about points and very little about defense. Texas, I believe, had started making the transition to an SEC style prior to coming into the SEC. In fact, that's part of the success, the success story. Make sure I get that word correct. The success story for the Longhorns this past year was the fact they're just much better up front defensively. And I think that Simmons gives them a chance to be that here this year. For Ole Miss, you know, obviously a number of names that could be mentioned. The name that I'd be watching at more closely would be Walter Nolan. That's the number 16 in this ESPN ranking. Nolan, the transfer defensive lineman, once again, Ole Miss believes has a chance to be in the college football playoff. Big-time defensive line, one of the things you have to be able to do that. So if you keep that defensive line conversation going, I think that's where you mentioned that for Ole Miss. The number 7 team in the ESPN ranking is Missouri. Probably no surprise they mentioned Luther Burden the third. You know, Luther Burden, I think, has a chance to be the very best wide receiver in the entire country here this year. Much the same way that a Marvin Harrison Jr. would have been discussed or Roma Dunze would have been discussed a year ago. Burden can be discussed that way as well. One thing you'll say about Eli Drinkwitz is Drinkwitz is proven capable of getting guys like this involved in offenses, you know, finding a lot of yards for players like this. And Brady Cook, who a year ago I think most Missouri fans wanted to see replaced, I think has been fairly well established as a pretty sort of upper-tier SEC quarterback. And so it could truly be a very potent Missouri offense against what looks to be a pretty favorable schedule. ESPN probably got this one right. The other one I'll mention here is for Alabama, it's Justice Haynes. I think one of the biggest mysteries in college football a year ago is why Haynes just didn't have more usage in his freshman season there at Alabama. Well, apparently that's one of the things that Kalen DeBoer wants to fix this year, find a way to get Justice Haynes more part of the offense. Obviously, it was eye-opening when Haynes chose Georgia, or I should say chose Alabama over Georgia, and then somewhat eye-opening when Alabama didn't use him very much or very effectively a year ago. It's probably Alabama's responsibility to get more out of Haynes because I do think he's a top-flight prospect. So we'll see if he is a big part of that Alabama offense here this year, and we'll make that cruising around the SEC courtesy of Royal Caribbean. All right, a couple of thoughts here on a couple of Georgia commits in the weekend, and then we're going to kind of broaden things out beyond football here too on Dog Nation Daily presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia. First of all, you had two commitments for Georgia over the weekend, Stephen Shivers, gigantic sort of run-stopping defensive lineman. You know, people will kind of gravitate towards the fact that he's a three-star and he's like number 12, number 13 rated player in Tennessee or something like that. If he is truly a run-stopping defensive lineman, which has been a heavy theme for our show here today, then I can promise you this, his recruiting ranking doesn't matter at all. He can be a two-star, he could be a no-star, he could be a negative star. He is a very important player to Georgia because the recruiting rankings, who I think get a lot right, major services will tell you, it's a little bit hard to accurately measure the sort of like nose tackle, run-stopping defensive lineman. A little bit hard to do that. And there are a lot of instances in which you can look at sort of players of the sort of size profile of Shivers. You might assume that Georgia would have a lot of interest in them, and sometimes Georgia doesn't. In other words, Georgia's got a sort of a pretty specific type of thing they're looking for from this spot. Seems like Shivers has got it. And if it is true that he is the player that Georgia thinks he is, I can promise you this, there aren't 13 players in Tennessee better than he is. If that's the case, I can promise you there aren't 13 players in Tennessee better than Shivers if he's the sort of run-stopping force that Georgia apparently believes he might be able to be. And speaking of the state of Tennessee, you also get to Jared Curtis here for a moment there as well. Number one quarterback in the class of 2026, was visiting Georgia this week, surprisingly gave Georgia a commitment there as well. Long way away, in a day and age in which Jaden Maiva announces a transfer to Georgia, and then like a couple of days later changes his mind. Who knows what Curtis does between now and signing day on 2026, but this is a good player. And as I said when we were on video about this on Saturday, if the only thing people take from Curtis is some sort of referendum one way or another about Matt Zollers or about Julian Juju Lewis, I think that's a misunderstanding here. I think that Curtis is a good enough player. He needs to be evaluated in his own right. Now, if you're somewhat tepid in your excitement about this because it's so far away, I kind of get that too. I do. But Curtis is the sort of player that if you don't care about him a ton now, you will eventually care a lot about him because I do believe that he has a chance to be a very promising quarterback prospect. A lot of people make a big deal about the fact that he played against Prince Avenue Christian this past year. And obviously Prince completely dominated that game from the sort of small private school level. Prince Avenue is a wagon. Like they are a behemoth. Like they're going to run over a lot of teams. So they're going to have more firepower on both sides of the ball than was it Christian Brothers, whatever the name of the school is, up in Tennessee. Evaluating Curtis may be a little bit like evaluating, like say Arch Manning at, in those private schools there in Louisiana. I'm not saying that Curtis is a similar level of prospect. I don't even know that. But when you watch the Arch Manning film, you see certainly not exactly the most stellar competition that he's playing against. In Curtis's case up there in Tennessee, maybe a similar situation. Our private schools here in this state are just a little bit of a different type of animal. Prince Avenue is an animal. I mean, they're mauling these sort of small private schools from other spots. Just a different type of team. And by the way, when it comes to sort of a quarterback versus quarterback battle, some people will tell you Brock Vandegrift didn't play very well against Gunnar Stockton in his high-profile battle a couple of years ago, and yet Vandegrift was still an elite prospect, and Vandegrift is expected to do big things in the SEC here this year. So I wouldn't make too much of Curtis's struggles against Prince Avenue a year ago. That doesn't mean a ton for me, especially given the fact he's only a sophomore in high school. That's not that big of a deal to me necessarily. One more kind of quick thought on this. Also, you know, what does this mean for Julian Lewis, who's, you know, going to make a decision here at some point in the summer, or Matt Zollers, who's going to make a decision in early April, just a few days from right now? You know, I don't know that either, other than to say Georgia's never going to be desperate for quarterback. You know, Georgia's never going to be in a position of weakness in whatever it's, I hate to even say negotiation position, but in this day and age, it's sort of what it is. And we sort of know that, you know, the Lewis family has certain things they're looking for. I don't know if you call them demands, but they certainly have expectations. And, you know, there are going to be a lot of programs who perhaps want to give that. In the case of Georgia, I'm sure they'd be willing to do a lot to get a guy like Julian Lewis to come and play at this program there as well. But they can also now say, well, we'd love to have you, but we also have this guy coming in 2026 there as well. The quarterback room, we believe, is going to stay strong no matter what. So perhaps an important thing to keep in mind. Also, good news outside the world of football here there as well. First of all, Diamond Dogs, after getting swept by Kentucky, Georgia comes out this weekend at home against a top-10-ranked Alabama team, gets the three-game sweep. That was a doubleheader on Saturday, then winning again there on Sunday. Charlie Condon stays hot, hit a home run off the batter's eye. I mean, about deep center field. What a smash that was. There was obviously the controversy after the game one on Saturday because of the ejection and the suspension for game two. Georgia was kind of fun about some of that kind of stuff. But most importantly, Georgia just got some much-needed SEC wins. And now they have shown up, I believe, in the Baseball America top 25. They're like 50 top 25s in college baseball. One of those is Baseball America. That's one of the more respected ones. And Georgia is in the top 25 there now. Basketball team also wins in the NIT there in Winston-Salem. I know that that the Georgia, I guess the X account for Georgia basketball, I guess they deleted their post where they were like, you know, mocking Florida and Auburn for losing in the NCAA tournament. Honestly, they shouldn't have deleted it. They should have just left it up. Like, I think you've got to lean into this and own it. Like, I was joking with our First and 15 audience a little earlier that everybody keeps saying, you know, going to the NIT and winning is better than making the NCAA and losing. Just sort of lean into it. Be obnoxious about it. Georgia gets a chance to play this week at Ohio State, which is kind of fun. So lean into that and have a good time with that. Georgia winning in Winston-Salem there last night. So SEC game is a little bit of a struggle for Georgia. Winning outside of the conference, actually been okay this year, and now getting a chance to play against Ohio State coming up this week. So good luck there. Also, other sports did well too. Softball continues to roll. I guess tennis had a good weekend. Some of those sports I don't follow quite as well, but good to see Georgia doing well in all of that. With that said, we'll wrap it up here today. And as we do, speaking of folks doing well, how about an update on our Golden Shoe Bracket Challenge? Let's take a look here at the tote board. And how about Shayna Jarrett stepping up here at the top? She's got 50 points right now, far more than me. I'm way down towards the bottom on this, as I expected I probably would be. Shayna's also got her national champion still alive, the Purdue Boilermakers. By the way, Purdue, as we said earlier, they look pretty good here right now. Chasing just behind Shayna is both Brad Morgan and Lance Deaton. They both have Houston as their national champ. They're at 49 and 48 total points for the first two rounds. Stephen England comes in a tie for fourth. He's 47 points. His champion's still alive. Our next folks, Bill Wolf, William Camacho, they both have Kentucky and Auburn, two teams no longer alive in the NCAA tournament. So fun battle there at the top of our Golden Shoe Bracket Contest. We'll keep that updated as it rolls on, and eventually we'll celebrate with the winner. A lousy stinking Gators. How about a Gator Hater Updater? 1,234 days. I told you we'd get there. 1, 2, 3, 4. Don't you love that? 1,234 days since Florida's beaten Georgia. That's our Gator Hater Updater. We will see all of you back here tomorrow. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella, Window and Door of Georgia.